Yeah, the Monday edition of Mr. Irrelevant, presented by Door County Distillery, locally produced, handcrafted, award-winning spirits. Hope everybody had a great weekend, a great Father's Day. I'm Alex Strofe with you from the Grubel offices, One Call, That's All studio at the Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Producer Tiny Hands, Hunter Vaughn, back at the Everlight Solar Studio in also beautiful downtown Madison. Hunter, busy day for you today. You produced Wilde and Tausch until noon. It is now 12:32. We are getting the show underway here. Busy Monday for you. Everything okay?
Yeah, everything's good. We're vibing with it. We're just rolling with it. Ignoring that I haven't eaten any food in like 6.5 hours, and I'm a big guy. So as soon as I'm done with this, I will be devouring my lunch.
All right, good.
But otherwise, okay. Yeah, we're doing great.
I have to ask you about something that was said on Wilde and Tausch today.
Okay.
By you. You said it.
Yeah.
You said that the NBA Finals did not schedule Game 5 yesterday, being Sunday night, because they didn't want to compete with, I'm going to screw up the title here because I'm not a Game of Thrones
House
guy.
Of the Dragon.
House of the Dragon, yes. Do you stand by that comment?
I don't think it was Adam Silver's figuring out the schedule and he's like, oh, nope, that's when that premieres. We can't touch it. I think it was that's premiering. Let's just, it works out. We can have it on the other night. Like, I think the NBA was like, oh, okay, that works out well. We're happy about that. And it's not an issue. I don't think it was we can't do anything with this sort of situation that Tausch made it out to sound like.
Okay. Interesting. I didn't know this show existed until I heard you say that.
It's literally one of the biggest shows. There was a year off because of the writer's strike.
I don't know if you said literally. One of the biggest shows, period? Is that end of sentence?
It's when its first season came out. I'll look up that year's like TV ratings, and it was one of the most watched shows of the year. Like, it was probably top five.
So this is not maybe as outrageous of a take as I thought it was when I heard it?
No, it's genuinely, like, this year, especially given what this first episode was, this year it will probably finish in the top five again for most watched television shows, and we'll have ridiculous streaming numbers on HBO. That's not at all an outrageous take. Game of Thrones was the same way outside of their last season. It was one of the top most watched shows. Hmm. So,
yeah. All right, there you go. There you go. How many episodes did you watch? Just one?
Oh, just one. They'll do one episode a week. So this was the season two premiere.
1 out of 10. 1 to 10. Where do you put it?
For a season premiere, I'd put it at a 8.
Wow. Okay. All right.
It was very good. I think there were some things they could have done better with it, but yeah, okay. I'm very happy with it.
Joshy DiMaggio, who helps run the show here at the Gruber Law Offices, One Call, That's All studio. Joshy, did you know what this show was either? Because you looked at me when I brought this up. I didn't know what this show was until today.
Yeah, I'm quite familiar with the show. I haven't watched it. I watched Game of Thrones and thought that ended so poorly, I'm not going to give them any more of my time or effort.
Oh, okay, so the last episode for Game of Thrones ruined it for you.
Yes, and I did think Hunter's comments were, in short, insane. With a little more context, I guess, sure, that's fine. But I don't think Adam Silver gave second thought to Thrones.
Is this
Dragons.
Real quick, because I don't have the series, so Hunter, Josh, I want an answer from both of you quickly before we dive into the weekend. This series is over tonight, right? Celtics win tonight, series over?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, we're all on the same page. Got it. Celtics in five. Terrific postseason run by them. But, I think it's over. 6.5-point favorites tonight, according to ESPN Bet. So it was fun while it lasted. I hate when postseason, similarly to Game of Thrones, when they end anticlimactically. I've never watched Game of Thrones. I don't know if it was anticlimactic or just a bad season or series finale, but nonetheless, I feel like the NBA playoffs, kind of a bad season finale, the way they're going out. Unless we have an epic game tonight in triple overtime and the Celtics pull it out on their home floor. But I want the best at the end of the postseason. And it seems like recently with the NBA, you're getting your best series in the first and second rounds. And then this year, the conference finals stunk, and we might have a gentleman sweep in the finals. So, yeah, it's still a little anticlimactic. I would have loved to see this go seven, right? The dramatics of a game seven. The best finals in recent memory is by a mile, the 2021 finals when the Milwaukee Bucks beat the Phoenix Suns. It was a great series. Milwaukee was down 2-0. They rattled off four in a row to win the title. It's a great series. We just haven't had those recently. But maybe we're all wrong. All three of us are wrong. Celtics lose on their home floor tonight. We go back to Dallas with this thing at 3-2, and all of a sudden there's a little bit more intrigue. That's what I hope for. I just don't expect it. All right, let's start with Snoop. Snoop went to the Snoop Dogg concert at Pottawatomie Saturday. Good times. Good stuff. He sounded really good. But prior to that, Snoop was at American Family Field. He threw out the first pitch at the Brewers game against the Reds on Saturday. Sal Frelick bobblehead night, by the way. Salvatore, a Sal Frelick Snoop crossover. How awesome is that? And then Brian Anderson, Bill Schroeder, they say, hey, Snoop, come up to the booth. Snoop ended up calling some action. I cut about 25 seconds for you to take a listen to, because Snoop in a broadcast booth might be the move going forward. Fox gave Tom Brady a bajillion dollars. Snoop might be the next guy to say, hey, give me a fat check to come call some sporting events, because this was electric. Listen to Snoop on Bally Sports Wisconsin over the weekend.
Oh, I need that. I need that thing.
You want to take it home?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good hit. That's a good hit. That's a good hit. He can't get there. Oh!
Foul ball.
Hey, I caught it. Mom, look, I made it!
Man, we gotta get some action going with the Brew Crew for Snoop.
They chilling right now. They laid back. You know, when you hang out with the dog, you got to be laid back. You know what I'm saying? So they laid back with their mind and their money right now.
When you hang out with the dog, you got to be laid back. They got their mind on their money right now. I love that. There's a, if you want to see more of that, on Twitter, at Brewers, they tweeted about 2.5 minutes of Snoop in the booth with B.A. and Bill. And boy, is it awesome. I mean, that is electric. And then Friday on Bally Sports Wisconsin, they were celebrating Bill Schroeder's 30th anniversary in the booth. So they brought back all of his former broadcast partners, which included Matt LaPay and Jim Paschke. Obviously, Brian Anderson was in there. You have Matt Verskirgin from the MLB Network now. I mean, there was just a bunch of names, good stuff. So it's shot at the Bally Sports Wisconsin on a great weekend between Snoop and Friday's celebration of Bill. But the Brewers also winning another series. They get two over the Reds, including yesterday and then in the deciding game after falling Friday in what was a really sloppy way to lose. Blake Perkins lays down a bunt with the tying run on third, winning run on second, two outs, ends the game. But then ultimately in the top of the ninth yesterday, Perkins makes a great throw from the outfield to get the runner out, the tying run out with two outs in the top of the ninth as well. So it was good stuff. It was good stuff from Blake Perkins. Goes from zero to hero from Friday to Sunday. And now I was reading an article this morning. There's a case being made that Blake Perkins needs to be an everyday guy after the nice throw he made yesterday. And some of the nice plays he made over the weekend offensively, minus the bunt on Friday. Hunter, you've always got takes when it comes to obscure Brewers. I throw Blake Perkins in that group for now, though he could emerge into an everyday guy. Where do we stand on Perk?
I'm totally fine with him, even if he doesn't make the great play on Sunday, because this is what is going to happen when you have a young team. I said it at the beginning of the year. It's a young Brewers team. Yeah. You're going to see moments where they rattle off some great baseball, but they're going to make mistakes. Blake Perkins probably hadn't been in that situation in a long time in a baseball game where he's trying to figure out, okay, what do I do? He got two in his head, tried to make a sneaky play, and it didn't work out for him, but he learned from it. He said he learned from it, and he's going to move on. So I don't understand. Jesse Nelson had the take on Saturday as he was hosting a Saturday kickoff before the Forward Madison match, saying that Blake Perkins needs to be cut, and he stood by it today on Wilde and Tausch. And I can't stand that. The dude's going to see like 100-something at bats in a season. He made a mistake on one at bat in June. Yep. It's okay. It's different when it's Jesse Winker seeing six pitches and two at bats in the playoffs, and somehow he's still getting at bats for Craig Counsell. That's completely different. A young guy trying to make a play, he just got too much in his head. Totally fine with it. Absolutely fine. Yeah. Keep on going. And I'm ecstatic with the direction the Brewers are in right now. I'm so pumped. They're going to win this division.
Yeah, they are. I mean, obviously, it's too early to call the race on June 17th, but a 6.5 game lead over the Cardinals, who are an even 500 at 35-35 on the year. Chicago Cubs, how's last place tasting, Craig? The Cubs over the weekend in a series with the Cardinals fall into last place. They're 8.5 games back of the Brewers. They are 34-38, three of the five teams in the NL Central under 500. As I mentioned, St. Louis right at 500, and Milwaukee 13 games above 500, 42-29 on the year now after two of three wins over Cincinnati over the weekend. It's a baseball city, baby. I mean, I said it on Brewers warm-up on Friday on 620 WTMJ leading into network coverage of the first of the three-game series against Cincinnati. But it's time to wake up when it comes to the Brewers. They are, as Hunter just alluded to, this young, up-and-coming team. And yeah, there's going to be some mistakes along the way. But they have built themselves a nice cushion here. 6.5 game lead in the middle of June. I love what they've got cooking. And everybody loves Pat Murphy. I think Pat Murphy might already be one of the more beloved managers in the MLB. And he's been the manager for what's the math on that? A total of 71 games. We're not even halfway through the year yet. And I think Pat Murphy, viewed nationally, as one of the more beloved manager, just given the spark and the fire this team has here into this year, right? And I mention all the time some of the young names, and if you've listened to the show for a while, you know I'm huge on Sal Frelick, although it's kind of been a bumpy road for him this year. But you look at that outfield, right? You got Perk, you've got Jackson Turia, you look at the infield, you got Bryce Terang, you got Joey Ortiz. Oh, and by the way, William Contreras, I know he's not technically a young guy, but he's emerged as the best catcher in all of baseball this season for the crew. So this team is really fun. Despite the injuries, despite the uncertainty, despite 12 starters, despite eight different guys who have gotten saves for them this year, this is a team that is playing winning baseball. And they are a really, really fun watch. So if you are one of those people that tune out after opening day and tune back in after the All-Star break, it's time to wake up. It's time to tune back in because you've got a really fun first-place ball team going out west this week. And you know, maybe you should sleep for the first couple games because they're playing the Angels, who are not very good, for those of you keeping track at home. But they do have the Padres, who they struggled with early in the year, coming up later this week, which all of those games are late starts, right? Like 8:30, 8:38, I think, is the first pitch tonight in game one against the Angels. But all week, late starts. But an interesting series, four-game stretch beginning Thursday against the Padres to keep your eye on over the weekend before returning home to host the world champion Rangers and then the Cubs to round out the month next week. So there's a lot of fun baseball to be played for this Brewers team over the course of the next few weeks as we lead up to next month's All-Star break. I'm fired up, though. This is a fun team. It was a fun team. And this weekend was just another indication of that. So if you are one of those people that tune out, it's time to tune back in. Chef Ed says Perkins can win you games with his defense. His offense is just a bonus. And yeah, you saw that arm on display yesterday for Blake Perkins. He is a guy that I think you could start making the case of, ooh, he might be an everyday cat. He might be. But you got some options in the outfield. Obviously, the four names I mentioned, then you got Garrett Mitchell eventually coming back from injury. So you're going to have five good options: Jackson Turia, Sal Frelick. You've, of course, got Christian Yelich. You add Garrett Mitchell in. It's a fun outfield. It's a fun outfield, Hunter. Go ahead.
The thing that's tough with the outfield, like you said, because of having those five good outfielders, and I was listening to the radio broadcast on 620 WTMJ on Sunday, and Turia a couple of times had some fly balls over to right where they could tell, and they pointed it out, that he's getting comfortable with right field and the way that it's laid out, and exactly, because that's a tough thing sometimes for young guys to come in and then figure out, okay, I have this many steps to get to the pole and those different things, and he's starting to figure that out. So I don't want to see him leave right field. Obviously, you can't take Yelich out of left, mm-hmm. and then you've got center field, so it's like it's somebody might be on the move, unfortunately, and I'd kind of be okay with it if they can figure out a way to get a really good starting pitcher, because with the injuries that they've got on their pitching staff.
Are you getting at something, Hunter? Is there something you're getting at right now that might pee me off a little bit? Is that what you're getting at?
Salvatore might be a Chicago White Sox. I've been seeing those rumors.
Whoa. Hold on.
Yeah.
I would be mad if they traded him, because you know I really like Sal. I like him as a dude. I like him as a player. I think he's really – you look, I understand the situation the Brewers are facing. But you can give him no more respect than the Chicago White Sox, who are the worst team in baseball.
They've got some young guys that you could get pieces for, and because of how bad they are, they're going to just be selling to kind of get anything. So they're somebody where you don't have to give up a lot probably to get some of their pieces. So unfortunately, I think he might be heading to Chicago. It's going to suck, but at least he's not going to be a Cub. So you could still enjoy it. Plus, you know, heck, we've got ESPN Chicago with our good Karma Brands family.
I do like the White Sox, but they stink right now, Hunter. We have to be honest with you.
I know, but he's going to get a lot of playing time then. He's going to get plenty of cuts. That's a good way for him to grow and develop and get a good contract.
If Sal is to be traded at some point, because we kind of are getting to that point of the year, right? We're about 2 months away from the deadline. Obviously, the All-Star break's coming up next month. And the Brewers are winning. And what we have noticed about them in the past few years is they have been more sellers at the deadline than buyers. However, this year that shouldn't be the case with some of the – they are winning through the uncertainty right now, right? Like I mentioned, they've had 12 starting pitchers. There's no way to track how many different starting pitchers each team has had in the league. But if I was a gambling man, which I am in this sense, I would bet that's top three in the league. 12 different starting pitchers through 71 games or 72 games, whatever it is, 71, I think. That's a lot. 8 different guys with a save. I imagine that's probably top of the league or towards top of the league. There's a team in first place with a nice cushion ahead of the second place Cardinals, who they're finding their footing for sure, but they're nothing special. This is a team that should be buying at the deadline. And if that results in Sal going elsewhere, can we at least do better than the White Sox? Please, that's all I ask, Hunter. Let's just do better than the White Sox. But you're right. There is a decision to be made in center field. And when Garrett Mitchell returns, which it's sounding like it will be pretty soon, you've got decisions to make. And I think Blake Perkins over the weekend made a very good case for why he should be the everyday center fielder. And you feel pretty darn comfortable, Hunter, right? If it goes from left to right, Yelich to Perk to Churia. You would be comfortable with that, right? Like, I feel like I like that outfield lineup. If that's your technical everyday lineup, you'd be comfortable with that, right?
Yeah, I'd be great with that, and having Mitchell to come in as a backup there. You're feeling good about that outfield. It's just they've got to figure out a way to get more pitching depth. It's just they're doing fine right now, but to win playoff series, you need more than what they have.
Tony on the YouTube chat says, if you're going to tease a rumor about Sal or anybody being shipped out, do you want to reveal where the rumor started and who the Brewers get in return? Hunter, the floor is yours. You brought it up.
I'm looking to find the exact website for who I've seen Garrett Crochet being thrown around as a name that the White Sox might be trying to ship out. I'm just trying to find the exact website so I can give the proper credit for that.
Well, we can come back to that. I think the point here is, though, this Brewers team is really fun. And Friday sucked the way that game ended. But a win Saturday, a nice win Saturday, 3-1. And then obviously the way it went down yesterday, Blake Perkins going from zero to hero over the weekend, was a really nice way to cap it off. And now you get this West Coast road trip this week. The Angels, man. I'll watch one of the three, maybe. But that Padres series is interesting because the Brewers did struggle with them earlier in the year, so we'll keep an eye on that. Let's move on to the Green Bay Packers. We go to the 9-2-0 as the Packers release their training camp schedule today. We knew already that July 22nd at 10:30 would be training camp date number one. We now have some dates for joint practices. We have some dates for family night, which is August 3rd, I believe, whatever that Saturday is. So you've got some dates to take a look at. Your first practice will be, as I mentioned, July 22nd. Last one, August 22nd, of the different schedules open to the public. You've got preseason games on the 10th, the 18th, and the 24th is the final one. The last practice open to the public, as I mentioned, on August 22nd will be that joint practice at home against the Baltimore Ravens. So ending the open to the public portion of the offseason with a joint practice against a really good team is a fun way to end training camp. Which, by the way, is just over a month away, July 22nd, as I mentioned. That's the only time that has been announced, 10:30 a.m. The shareholders meeting will take place in the Lambeau Field atrium as well that day at noon. So a jam-packed day up in Green Bay to kick off the work week on July 22nd. And then you've got two or three practices pretty much every week that you can attend, minus that second week, that final week of July into that first week of August. You've got four open to the public practices on the 28th, 30th, 31st, and 1st, and then you've got Family Night at Lambeau Field on that Saturday night, August 3rd. So stuff to keep an eye on. There you go. That came out just about an hour ago. So if you're looking to get up to Green Bay, if you live in Green Bay and you're trying to plan it out, feel free to take a screenshot. There it is. There's your schedule for the offseason program. The Packers, though, will be doing joint practices as well in Denver before their preseason game on the 18th with the Broncos. So LaFleur all in on these joint practices, which I think is interesting. I think it gets you ready. I think it brings up the intensity level quite a bit as you're trying to ramp up. You're trying to go from a team that had a surprising season to a team that's having a legitimate contending season in 2024. So that is something to keep an eye on. I do want to talk training camp battles on the other side. I also want to dive into Jordan Love and the contract and everything we heard over the weekend from that side of things. So we will do that coming up next. But first, got to tell you about my friends at Door County Distillery, locally produced, handcrafted, and award-winning spirits made locally in beautiful Door County. Weather was great over the weekend. If you were up there and you popped in, you made the right choice. And if not, you can bring Door County to you wherever you are. Madison, Milwaukee, check out their website, DoorCountyDistillery.com, to see where you can find that signature bottle of gin, that cherry vodka or cherry brandy made with local Door County cherries, or any of the in-betweens, whether it's the whiskeys, the single malt, the rye, the bourbon, all award-winning, all delicious, all in a good price range. It is just terrific. They do it better than everybody else. They're local, support local, make the right choice. Visit their website, DoorCountyDistillery.com. You can also find that huge list of unique cocktail recipes, including some that we made up when we were up there shooting commercials like the one you're going to watch right now. Back in 60 seconds with the most intriguing training camp battles for the Green Bay Packers. It's Mr. Relevant. I'm Alex Stroh.
Back at Door County Distillery in Carlsville, Wisconsin, with my friend Beth from Door County Distillery. We're mixing up the peach gin and juice today. That sounds like Snoop Dogg would love it. Talk to me, Beth. What are we mixing?
So we're using our gin, our flagship gin today. It's gin, lemonade, a little grenadine, and then our peach wine. So you remember the Carlsville Sour we did last year?
I do, very well, yeah.
Same concept. It's just going to, the gradient's going to be in reverse. So I'm going to start with an ounce and a half of our gin.
The classic green bottle.
We're going to do an ounce of grenadine, 2 ounces of our lemonade. We're gonna stir that with our bar spoon.
Got it, before we add the wine.
And then we're gonna use the back of our bar spoon to float the peach wine on top. And there we go.
Looks like summer to me, Beth. Cheers.
Cheers.
The peach gin and juice from Door County Distillery with my friend Beth.
Check out their website with a huge list of unique cocktail recipes at DoorCountyDistillery.com. That's DoorCountyDistillery.com. I didn't even wear the shirt on purpose today. I didn't realize I was matching the commercial, Hunter. That was a good editorial choice by me. That was a complete coincidence. So there you go. As we dive into, we're about a month plus away from training camp, which I just mentioned kicks off July 22nd for the Green Bay Packers. I was thinking over the weekend about how, you know, the Packers are in a really good position, right? When you compare to where we were a year ago, there was uncertainty everywhere. Quarterback, wide receiver, running back was the one position offensively you felt good about. Tight end, right? You had two rookies coming in that were going to be your one and two. Offensive line, I'm not even sure you felt completely comfortable with because there was still uncertainty surrounding David Bakhtiari. You didn't really know who your right tackle was yet until Zach Tom had his welcome to the NFL moment. And you go, holy crap, that guy's incredible. And he's catapulted into the second best O-lineman for the Packers. There was so much uncertainty, especially offensively last year. And then you still had Joe Barry as a D coordinator, so nothing felt comfortable for the Packers last year as they entered training camp. So this year, we're in a little bit different of a spot as Green Bay Packers fans. You feel comfortable with the offense. You feel comfortable with the defense. Obviously, a new defensive coordinator in Jeff Hafley, who's going to bring you something, right? He's going to bring you a little juice. He's going to bring a little bit of a schematic change, right? I was reading an article this morning, and it was weird to me to read Packers DE Rashawn Gary talks about being healthy. Defensive end Rashawn Gary. Just something you weren't used to in the old Joe Barry defenses. He was technically an outside linebacker in that defense. So all these exciting changes and positive vibes coming out of 1265 Lombardi Ave had me thinking, all right, where should we have our eyes when training camp kicks up in a month? Which battles should we be looking into and thinking about when it comes to the Packers training camp this year, because there is an obvious one that we will start with, and that is the kicker battle. There are not any teams in the NFL with three kickers on their roster except the Green Bay Packers. It is Anders Carlson. It is Greg Joseph. It is Jack Podlesny. It looks like Carlson is still the front runner, and if anybody's going to give him a run for his money, it's going to be Greg Joseph. But they still have Podlesny under contract, which means the adage is, right, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. I don't know what they say about kickers, but I imagine if you have three, it probably isn't a good thing. When you have three kickers, it means you have no idea who your kicker is. And Hunter subscribes to this theory he shared a few times on the show, which is essentially just pick a kicker and go, and if you don't like him, get rid of him. I don't know if I love that theory in June. Obviously, in September, I like it. But in June, I don't know. Let them fight it out. Let them each get some reps. Let them feel the pressure against one another. I remember when Mason Crosby, at his first Dan year for the Packers, they brought in a guy by the name of Giorgio Tavecchio in the offseason to compete with him. And it made Crosby better. And Crosby went on to have one of his best seasons as a Green Bay Packer. So maybe in this case, pressure can create diamonds out of Anders Carlson. I don't have high hopes for Durst. I didn't when he was drafted. He wasn't a very good college kicker, let alone good enough to get drafted. He was handed the job last year after the Packers decided to subscribe to the youth movement and move on from Mason Crosby. And then Durst just had kind of a, like the Packers season, a roller coaster of a ride. But especially at the end of the year, he was missing some crucial kicks. And that just can't happen when this is a team that has legitimate championship aspirations in 2024. This is a team that thinks they can get further than they did a year ago, which means they are then, if they get further than they were a year ago, one of the last four teams remaining in the NFL playoffs. And at that point, it's anybody's game. You play the game for a reason. The Packers think they have a legitimate chance to play in the Super Bowl this year. I do too. But a couple things need to break right, and I feel like kicker is a semi-important position to keep an eye on. That's position number one that obviously we have our eyes on. It is the most obvious competition going on, right? Because you only roster one kicker, and when you have three in June, that's a little bit abnormal. So that is position battle number one that I have my eye on. Number two is, how does the offensive line shake out? We assume it'll be one or the other of this: Rashid Walker, Elton Jenkins, Josh Myers, Sean Ryan, Zach Tom from left to right. That is what you assume, either that or Jordan Morgan, Elton Jenkins, Josh Myers, Sean Ryan, Zach Tom. You just assume the biggest battle is that left tackle. Though I don't know that that's necessarily true, because the Packers are very clearly comfortable with Andre Dillard, the former first-round pick who they signed this offseason, at right tackle. He's been the guy filling in for Zach Tom. They have been using Jordan Morgan as a guard. And if you missed it today, Brian Bulaga, the former Packers right tackle, was on Wilde and Tausch doing tackle talk with Tausche. And he mentioned they've got to stop that crap when it comes to Jordan Morgan, as a guard. He's a tackle. And Bulaga knows a hell of a lot more what he's talking about when it comes to tackles than I do. So something to keep your eye on there when it comes to Jordan Morgan. But offensive line is interesting. I don't know that I'm fully comfortable with Josh Myers at center. I don't know if the Packers are totally in on the idea of Zach Tom as your right tackle, because you signed Andre Dillard. You have Jordan Morgan. You like Rashid Walker. There might be some flexibility to move Zach Tom inside. And when they try things like that out is training camp. So offensive line, I would go out on a limb and say this: I do not think your starting five offensive linemen will be Rashid Walker, Elton Jenkins, Josh Myers, Sean Ryan, and Zach Tom. I am comfortable saying three of the starting linemen will be Elton Jenkins, Sean Ryan, and Zach Tom. I just don't know that it is definitely locked in that Zach Tom is your right tackle, and I don't know that it's definitely locked in that either Morgan or Walker will start. I think there is a world in which they both could start. So that's something to keep an eye on with the offensive lineman. That's position battle number two that I have my eye on. Position battle three is the defensive end position. Now, the assumption right now, and I assume the week one depth chart will indicate, Rashawn Gary and Preston Smith. That would be my guess. But is year two an opportunity for a big sophomore jump, not a sophomore slump, for Lucas Van Ness? Van Ness was a high first-round pick a year ago. He was a guy who was not used a ton in his rookie season. Now you have a scheme change in his sophomore season. Something I'm intrigued by is if Lucas Van Ness can make a jump to the starting lineup. Will he be one of those top two defensive ends alongside Rashawn Gary? That's something I have my eye on. Safety, too, is another defensive position I think everybody's got their eye on. Who will start opposite of Xavier McKinney? Javon Bullard is, of course, the heavy favorite, being a second-round pick, being a defensive back out of Georgia. We know Goody loves his defensive players out of Georgia. Will it be Javon Bullard? Will it be Evan Williams? Or will it be the dark horse and Anthony Johnson Jr., the seventh-round pick out of Iowa State a year ago? I think safety, too, is more intriguing, and there's more competition there than we expect. Although Javon Bullard got the high draft pick this year, I don't know that it's his job right now as it stands. I think that is wide open for anybody to come through. And I think those preseason games at this position more than any other one will play a huge, huge factor, will play a huge role in determining who is the other safety aside to Xavier McKinney. You make that big of a signing in the offseason, signing the best free agent safety debatably out there in McKinney, you better do okay across from him. And I hope they do with either Javon Bullard, Anthony Johnson Jr., Evan Williams, whoever it ends up being. Catan Oladapo, another draft pick who's been injured. Just something to keep an eye on. Last one I have brought up is cornerback, because the Packers didn't go heavy on cornerback in the draft. They only drafted one in the seventh round, the guy out of Penn State. Are you comfortable with Alexander and Valentine and Stokes? Is Stokes fully healthy? Is Carrington Valentine, who, by the way, also at a Brewers game this weekend, threw out the first pitch on Friday. Do you think those are your corners? Or does somebody else emerge? Does King, Callan King out of Penn State, does he really pop off the page because the talks around him are he is much better than a seventh-round pick? So those are the five positional battles I'm taking a look at as we lead up to training camp. Kicker, O-line, defensive end, safety two, and cornerback are the ones I have my eyes on. A lot of Brewers reaction on the chat today. Ryan on the ESPN Madison stream says trade Perkins or Mitchell. Joseph agrees, says he would trade Mitchell. Hesitant to trade Perkins with elite defense. So a lot of reaction on the Brewers. So these people are tuned in. I'm proud of everybody chiming in on the ESPN Madison, ESPN Milwaukee YouTube chat when it comes to the Brewers. But just to revisit Packers, the five positional battles I've got my eyes on. Kicker, defensive end, offensive line, safety two, and cornerback are the five that pop off the page to me as it stands right now. No quarterback battle, unless you want to talk quarterback too, which actually is an interesting one. Madden ratings leaked over the weekend. Michael Pratt is rated higher than Sean Clifford, last year's backup on the Packers Madden roster. So if Madden is any indication, Michael Pratt, the draft pick out of Tulane, as it stands right now, your backup quarterback for 2024. Hunter, how much should I lean into these Madden ratings that were a little bit leaked over the weekend?
Absolutely none.
Okay.
Except Dak Prescott leaked at a 90 overall, which was higher than Jordan Love. So
did you see what Jordan Love was?
76.
Yeah, what the hell? He ended last season at an 81.
It's got to be the throw accuracy ratings that are just tanking it for him.
Yeah,
I'm going to guess it's like his deep and medium throw accuracy for some reason is just wonky. Because I don't know what else they would like mess with him. They had him at an 81 speed, which usually like pushes quarterback ratings up because I'm such a like Madden nerd. I know those things. So that's literally after the first update that they'll do to the rosters after like the preseason, he's going to jump up to like probably close to an 80. Like, that's just usually what happens to guys like that.
I would hope so.
I think he finishes the year as a top 10 rated quarterback on Madden.
I would guess so, too.
He'll get up to the mid-80s.
But a 76 feels disrespectful for a guy that's going to get paid.
Yeah, but they're usually not kind to, like, second-year quarterbacks.
Like, which Love is technically right.
Yeah, so it's like, I think that's also part of it, is they're kind of viewing it as they'd rather have to bump him up a bunch than put him at, like, an 85 and then say, oh, okay, now all of a sudden he's just going to, you know, fall down into the 70s. So Madden's weird with that stuff. I only pay attention to it when Dak Prescott's higher than Jordan Love.
Okay, fair enough. Guess I won't argue with that. Will his contract be higher than Jordan Love, though, is the question.
Unfortunately.
As the speculation continues around Jordan Love, will he be the next quarterback to sign? We talked about it Friday. Pretty Ricky, 213, the People's Insider, which, by the way, awful announcing, wrote an article about him over the weekend. So people catching on to the Pretty Ricky 213 vibes. But Pretty Ricky said the Packers are racing to get a deal done. I would anticipate this before we hear from Jordan Love from over the weekend on a cameo. So Jordan Love has a football camp in the Milwaukee area on Tuesday, July 16th. On Wednesday, July 17th, quarterbacks and rookies report to Packers OT or training camp. I would guess that is the week a deal gets done. Somewhere between Thursday, July 11th and the start of training camp, July 22nd. I would say that's about your 11-day range in which a deal will be reached. Between July 11th and July 22nd, Jordan Love will become, I would guess, the highest paid quarterback in the league at that moment when it comes to annual average per year, his average salary, however it averages out. I would guess because Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow are currently tied at $55 million a year after Lawrence's contract last week. I would go ahead and guess that Love will be either with them in that group or above that, assuming Tua Tagovailoa and Dak Prescott don't get a deal done prior to that July 11th through July 22nd range is where my estimation is on Jordan Love's contract signing, Hunter.
Before we get too far into the contract stuff for Jordan Love, Joseph on the YouTube chat bringing up a position battle you did not mention, the long snapper one.
Oh, yeah.
As Joseph thinks that that could have been a part of Anders Carlson's kicking issues were some bad snaps that weren't getting the ball in the right spot. So any thoughts there?
It's a good point by Joseph. It is a good point. Look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I am the authority on long snapping battles. I don't know what the hell I'm evaluating. Whether it's, you know who would be good for that is Brad Nortman. Weekdays 2 to 5 on Kyle Bruston Nortman, the former NFL punter. He would know a heck of a lot more about that than I would. But when it comes to Bowden out of Wisconsin, we want him to win. But I'm blanking on his first name. That's how much I know about the long snapper battle. But it is a good point. It is a real battle. They do have two guys under contract for that, including Bowden, Peter Bowden, out of Wisconsin, who was signed as an undrafted free agent, and he is still on the roster. They like what they've seen out of him. That seems like a real battle. And Peter Bowden out of Wisconsin, we always want a Badger to root for on the Packers roster, even if it's the long snapper. So hopefully he wins that battle, and it is an improvement at that position. It is a good point by Joseph, but I just don't know how to evaluate long snapping. That's why I didn't bring that one up, but it is a good call. When it comes to the Love contract, though, I still feel very similarly to how I did a week ago. I think it is a non-story until it is a story. And if we get to July 22nd, if we get through that Sunday night, and we do not have a deal reached, and the Packers are scheduled to step foot on the practice field at 10:30 a.m. Monday morning, and I go to bed Sunday night without a deal in place, I will start being a pessimist. I will start being negative. I will start worrying about what the Packers are doing in the negotiation room that has led to this long of a holdup when it comes to this contract. But I would guess by July 22nd, there's a deal done. That's that. Jordan Love over the weekend recorded a cameo. He was on a football field in the cameo. And he was asked to record a happy Father's Day message. Here's Jordan Love from over the weekend.
The Bears fans out there, go back.
Let's try that one more time.
Happy Father's Day to all the Bears fans out there. Go Pack, go.
That is a Father's Day wish from the Bears' father, Jordan Love, who wishes all Bears fans a happy Father's Day after he goes 2-0 in his first year as the starter against them. I would like to give a hero award, say thank you to whoever in the world sent that to Jordan Love on Cameo or whoever got him to record that video. Because I saw some Bears rookie over the weekend saying F the Green Bay Packers on Barstool Chicago. It's just like, hey, ownership has been maintained for the last two decades by the Green Bay Packers. Favre signed it over to Rodgers. Now Rodgers signing it over to Love. And on his second Father's Day as the Packers starting quarterback, he records a 5-second video saying happy Father's Day to all the Bears out there from your daddy. Damn straight, Jordan Love. Well said, my man. I love that swagger. He started his tenure as the Packers' starting quarterback by going to Chicago and whooping their asses. There's nothing better than that right there, man. Tell you what. Tell you what. All right, time to wrap up the show as we always do. You learn something new every day. I learned something new today as well. Hunter has not learned what I learned yet, though. And Hunter and I were talking off the air a little bit. I said, Hunter, you know, I'm more of a hard knocks guy than I realized. He said, yeah, Bears are a good team for it. Bears are a good team for it. They are the preseason edition of HBO's Hard Knocks, the Chicago Bears. We knew that already. That was announced a few weeks ago. Today, though, Hunter, if you don't mind popping yourself on the screen because I would like to watch your reaction.
Oh, geez.
Announced today, though, is the in-season edition of Hard Knocks, who they will be following during the season. Do you have any guesses?
I'm going to guess that it's going to be the Cowboys, isn't it?
It is not the Cowboys. However, okay. It is an entire division. I will give you that hint. I have mentioned several times on the show there is two divisions I am really intrigued by this NFL season. We can go ahead and eliminate the NFC North because the Bears are already part of the preseason edition. The other division that I have been intrigued by, who has been selected for the in-season edition of Hard Knocks, Hunter, is?
The AFC North?
You are correct. The AFC North, Bengals, Browns, Steelers, Ravens, will be featured on the in-season edition of Hard Knocks. So not one, not two, not three, all four teams in the division, maybe one of the toughest, if not the toughest division in the entire NFL, will be featured on the in-season edition of Hard Knocks announced earlier today by HBO. I'm fascinated by this. I hope this works, though. I just worry, right, each episode is an hour long. That's only 15 minutes on each team. Are we going to be able to get in the weeds enough in a tough division? Because legitimately, Hunter, right? Like, I would assume the Steelers are the worst team in this division, but Mike Tomlin goes over 500 every year. He wins nine games like it's clockwork. So they might not be the worst team in the division. The Browns are hoping with a healthy Deshaun Watson and a healthy Nick Chubb and a good defense, this could be a playoff team. Cincinnati was just in the Super Bowl a few years ago. If Joe Burrow can remain healthy, that's a 12-win team. And we just saw what Baltimore did last year. Their quarterback won the MVP. They were in the AFC Championship game first time Baltimore had hosted that. They're looking to get a step further this year. This division's very, very sexy on paper as it stands on June 17th. But I worry we're not going to have enough camera time in these episodes for all of the juicy scoops and tea going around in the division. But I'm fascinated by it.
Yeah, but I think it's also going to be like every week, I think it'll change up a little bit. Like you might just get a short update on the Steelers 1 week, but then if it's Ravens Bengals, you're going to get much more of that going on for that week, and they'll kind of change it up. So everyone ends up with about the same amount of airtime, but I think every episode you're going to see a disparity one team to the other based on what's going on. What happened that previous week in their games, as well as what's going on looking ahead. So that'll be really fun too, because like late in the season, you're going to get probably very heavy Bengals Ravens battling for the division. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to be like, oh yeah, by the way, here's the Browns,
by the way, here's Deshaun Watson. Here's Kevin Stefanski. There you go. All right. That'll do it. That will do it. For us today, we are back with you Friday, no show Wednesday, celebrating the Juneteenth holiday. We will be out at the Milwaukee Juneteenth Parade, and then back with you Friday at 12:30. Lots of off-season juice to dive into. We will continue to do that here on Mr. Relevant. Big thanks to Hunter. Big thanks to Joshy for keeping us on the air, making us look and sound good. We're back with you Friday. Enjoy the week. We'll talk to you then. It's Mr. Relevant. I'm Alex Stroh. Peace.